The Carol Cox Show on K108. Heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Good morning. Welcome to The Carol Cox Show. Thanks for joining. And we're going to follow up on after some good music, and I'm going to share with you today. We all talk about the dog-eat-dog world. What I want to talk about and share with you some insight on something that has always been tossed about as a joke and within the community, and the POCA was discussing to some degree racism and ethnicity and the things that are tossed about to reflect on one culture or one people while putting them down. Well, this today is, you know, we have this saying, this is a dog-eat-dog world. Well, what I'm going to talk about is the world that it's a man-eat-dog world. And what I mean by that is that, did you know that it is just not mere fiction that here in Hawaii we have a large amount of people eating dogs? And I encourage any of you that want to chime in on this subject to call in, feel free, express your opinions and share your thoughts. And this thing, for the last 6 months, I've been just quietly trying to document the various locations where dogs are sold and they're commercialized here in the state of Hawaii, here in Paradise, I should say. And but what has happened is that there's this stigma, this representation that only one certain group of people or ethnicity eat the dogs. When in fact, what I've been able to document, you go across the board. You have Koreans, you have Filipino, you have I actually know African Americans that tell me they've eaten it occasionally. Portuguese, and a number of other people, and some Chinese. So we're going to have a healthy discussion, because it's we get past that pointing the finger, and it's like the old saying that's associated with African Americans. We love fried chicken, when in fact you can find fried chicken in any culture. It's chicken is just chicken. But this is what happens. Now, if we get past that, here's the big problem. It's unregulated, and I'm not advocating that we even tolerate eating dog and advocate for it. And I know there's many of you would love to quickly call up and tell me, well, the government shouldn't tell people what to eat. And that is true, and neither should Carol Cox tell anyone what they should eat. But there are some problems when you are eating the pet of some other person. And there's a practice now that's going on in the state of Hawaii. Because of hardship, or it's become a common practice and the increase of consumption. And when I say increase, in 2004, I actually did the same thing and attempted to get some passage of a bill, and Representative Sonson, some of you might, your memory may be refreshing, at that time was and they denied that anyone was eating dog. And then when it gains momentum and steam, there's a debate, well, the Filipino caucus might object. And then Sonson came out and said, well, you know, this is an attack on an ethnic group, the Filipino. But initially it was said that he said that there was no evidence or record or anyone was eating dog. So we've had all of this kind of craziness, and I actually purchased a dog live under the pretenses that I would be killing him for consumption. And the problem is, the agencies that are responsible for protecting the animals are conflicted. And I've reported this in the past, where the Humane Society, members from that organization, here the Hawaiian Humane Society, said that as long as the animal is shot in the head or the dog is shot in the head, it's not inhumane. But what's happening is that there is actually a practice right here amongst us where people are snatching dogs, and cats, mind you, snatching dogs and taking them to certain people that are actually butchering them and selling them. Now, there's a big difference, and I want to make sure you hear me right. Some argue, well, you should be able to eat what you want to. Well, okay. We'll put that on the side for a moment. But should that person be able to eat anything that he wants to that belongs to another? Should that person be able to capture dogs or steal them or buy them from someone else and then take that dog and sit him in a cage with no flooring, cold, wet, little or no food, because the idea is that you don't want to catch a dog, contain him, and then turn him back and then start to feed him? That's going to create an expense, which you're trying to make money off of. So you're going to refrain from feeding him. And I say that, I know that to be fact, because I've interviewed a number of people that sell dogs now. And just quietly, and I know many of you say, well, how are you doing that? They see you on TV and what have you. And I must confess, I'm doing a lot of it. But a bit of it is being done by several people that are just sick and tired of, one, the stigma that is the label that, and the misinformation that a certain ethnic group is eating dog and selling dog. It's across the board. Everyone is. So I've been fortunate enough to have friends that are, and people who believe in what we're doing, that are Filipino, that are Korean, and Chinese, and others, and Hawaiian, that has joined forces with me to bring some light to the subject. The subject, whereas it was always about a black dog, and it was a joke, and what have you. But the reality is, we, right now, before the Senate and the State House, there's a bill. They are talking about puppy mills. And, you know, puppy mills can be bad, and they've been shown to be bad, but not all puppy mills are bad. But in the effort to ban puppy mills or regulate them more heavily, they cite these animals are subjected to little or no food at times, have to stand on a wire mesh flooring and can't rest and wet and crowded conditions and what have you. The reality is the same thing occurs in facilities where dogs are being held and sold in a worse fashion. The question then becomes, why is it that we will aggressively pursue the puppy mill issue out of this concern for humane treatment, and yet the Senate, the House, task everyone else with proving and showing these things that are going on in the dog meat business, or just simply turning a cold shoulder, denying that it exists, and tasking the advocates for the bill to support that would either ban or start to regulate the consumption of dog meat. But yet, what is happening, no one is pushing So when the Humane Society, the Hawaiian Humane Society, states that it is not cruel and that we don't want to get in the minds of people and tell them what they can eat and what they, but you, that's okay if that's the position you take. But you still have a responsibility in regulating and preventing the inhumane treatment before they put it on the table, if that's the route you're going to take. Now, I think it's just dumb across the board that you would not be aggressive. And if I'm able to assemble people to assist and recruit them, then you would think the Humane Society would be doing it. I'm operating on little or no budget, just on people power to do this. But I can only tell you, and I'm going to post a picture up at carolcox.com, only one right now, that I'm going to post up. And this picture will tell a portion of the story. Now, I warn you, if you're sensitive and you like to cry, or you might cry, don't go there. I'm sitting at a distance photographing a known and documented facility that is responsible for the death of many dogs in the sale and the trade and the consumption of dogs. And there is this small young puppy, and you'll see for yourself, this animal is destined to be butchered. And I'm withholding any locations because I'm still doing a lot more work on this, because I think that once and for all we need, and I ask that you and others. Now, there's some politics that goes on with this, which I alluded to earlier about the original bill. In the last month or so, we've been able to go in and document a number of facilities that are either butchering other animals. And if you saw the conditions, you would have to ask yourself, how is it that we could have such talk and such glamour, chocolate days and tuxedo days and all of that? In the animal protection world, people having walks and parades with the animals and love their pet. I'm not disagreeing with that, but you would have to ask, how on earth, if you know the conditions that I'm witnessing and documenting, how on earth can anybody in their right mind or in their good conscience go on TV and talk about tuxedos and tails and all of that, and then when someone tells you that animals are being shot and killed and eaten and treated inhumanely, you go to the police and you report Carol Cox for supposedly running around buying dogs? That is something we're going to sort through. But what about the health risk to humans? Now, I have also learned in this process that on occasion, if a person come across a dog that is either dying or has been hit by a car and just killed, that dog is picked up and taken to a facility and sold. That dog then is treated, processed, put in the freezer, or if there's someone immediately wanting it, they will buy it. And I'm not making this up. Now, I don't believe in sitting here lying about something that I got better things to do. But the reality is, and I'm just trying to hold back because it's difficult to go to these facilities and watch what's happening, because you can't call the police and you can't call the Humane Society because they've already established that the police would, if they had some aggressive assistance from the Humane Society, I believe the police would take an action. But it's that lukewarm, milk-toasty, mealy-mouth approach that it's okay to shoot them, But we're not worried about, but to get them to shoot them, you subject them to all the other inhumane conditions. So what happens then with this process, I want to describe to you, we're going to be posting some video and some audio, and we'll let you hear for yourself, and you make the determination, draw your own conclusions. Is it a reality? Should we be tolerating this practice amongst us? I'm not going to go and step across that line and tell you what to do. But knowing the many of you out there that I've come across and met, you wouldn't tolerate any of it if you knew it. So give you a description of here's the process of, now this is just one process. Now there are many processes. So I get a small dog. This is, I'm paraphrasing one of the butchers or one of the sellers. I take a small dog. If it's small enough and the customer wants a small one, I take my hand and I put it over its snout and suffocate it. Now, that speaks to the Humane Society drawing conclusions that as long as they're shot in the head, it's okay. It's not inhumane. So, one. And once it succumbs or passes out, I then take my knife and poke a hole in its throat where I drain blood into a bottle or a bowl. And then the customer wants that blood for dinuguan or brown meat or to make pudding. They call it brown meat. And they then take that and they take that animal. Then, well, maybe unconscious or whatever, and then take a torch and burn the hair on the dog. Now, sometimes, he tells me, sometimes that the dog may not completely pass out and you'll see it reacting to the torch. And I tell you this, I know it's Sunday morning, I know this doesn't go good with croissants and strawberry jelly and coffee. I know it doesn't set well, but you know, I call the Carol Cox Show and I'll give you some Toms or some anti-nausea if you like. But the reality is, if you were to be there with me and you see while he's telling you this and when they're telling you this on these approaches, and you're looking at the cage, you can't take them, you can't do anything, you can't buy them all and take them home live. But you can sit there and be pained and bothered by the fact that we have these extravagant occasions and parties and money floating about in the city giving a person, proposing to give a person $450,000 to buy a vehicle, to go and neuter, spay, pet, whatever. And yet, we turn our backs and tolerate, not tolerate the eating, but tolerate this vicious cycle of inhumane acts against these animals. And until you've walked in one of these facilities and how nasty they are, you will understand. I even had him say that when I asked, well, what about parvo? Or diseases? Well, person won't know. We cut him up. Do you test him for anything? Nope. No regulatory efforts. No nothing. Now, how would you know that they're selling dogs? Well, dogs of various sizes, caged in cages that are unkept, exposed to the elements. You wouldn't think that anyone would, if they were housing a dog, they would actually have a cover on it and have to protect the animal from the elements. But in a temporary holding, you wouldn't worry about those things. And there's a high demand. Some instances, I've spoken to people that said they occasionally raise 50 dogs or so to sell to the butcher and the time is Christmas time. I'm not making this up, folks. This is documented in video and audio and photographs. Now, I'd like to hear from at least one of you out there and tell me, am I off base? I want to be able to gauge where am I going with this. Should I care, or is this a Carol Cox self-made agenda, or I'm advocating for something that I only believe in? Not that, let me qualify that, not that I'm going to stop. I mean, if I don't hear from any of you, you know, or whatever. But I want to know, get some sampling out there. So if you'd like to call 524-1080, I'd like to just get a sampling of what's out there and how do you feel. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, it's your friend again.
Hey.
You know, these incidents that you're witnessing and videotaping, are these illegal activities that should be reported to the authorities, or this is these activities that are condoned that I agree with you should be stopped voluntarily, or maybe enacting laws? So I'm not sure.
Neither. Thank you, because I'm at this crossroads of asking the same questions, and no one wishes to enforce it because, quote, it's not illegal to eat dog, and the government shouldn't get in the business of telling people what to eat. But on the other hand, to eat it, you have to, as I've said, you have to subject it to these practices of keeping them in these conditions. And I have some video and chains and pictures where a couple of the dogs contain, just as a sample, in a steel cage and with a chain around its neck or a large leather rope around its neck. Now, why would you have an animal contained in a cage, then in turn have a rope around its neck? Now, can I draw the conclusion that people are eating dogs from that? No, I shouldn't, but I do know that the inhumane aspect of it is a big problem. So, again, dogs have roundworms, tapeworms, and all of that. And I was floored by some of the people, one of the dealers told me that he identified a couple of the stores that were requesting dog meat. And in doing so, and some like, I guess he said, he didn't call it sashimi, but like to have it raw with onions and peppers and what have you, kalawan. I don't know what it's called, but I know in Guam there was a beef something like that. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Yeah, Carol, I just want to add to that what I said. If it's not, it's partially illegal, because anytime you raise a product and you sell it on the market, you come under the auspices of having gross income license. You should fill the facilities should be inspected by the Board of Health. So that many governmental agents should be involved when you're selling dog meat for consumption. Right now, there's a thing going on about horse meat in some of these fast food entities, and right now there's a big push by the Board of Health to get unlicensed food wagons off the street, which they're doing very effectively. So why aren't they going after people selling dog meat, which could be, if it's legal, but it should be regulated? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you. Some of the questions that come about is There's an actual bill, Bill SB 197, introduced by this year by Senator Suzanne Chan Oakland, and it was awaiting hearing or scheduled for hearing on those Mr. Clayton, he or Senator Clayton, he. And I have recently had the occasion now, and there's a greater story to be told with this, and I will assemble it later. But for the purpose of this conversation, I just peripherally to say to you that there's an attempt to get this bill scheduled for hearing. And that didn't happen, and I called up. Well, early on, I called up to speak to the bill and offer support and share with them that I have evidence and we should consider this, not treated like we did years back with Colleen Hanabusa, who refused to schedule a hearing, not like Calvin Say, who refused to schedule a hearing on this. But what I was told is, one, there's a person, Barbara Steinberg on Maui, who was attempting to work and introduce the bill, and they provided her, as she represents now, I haven't seen anything much in writing, but she represents that they led her on for some while, close to 2 months, they being Clayton He's office and others in the legislature, by one requesting or requiring she and her fellow advocates to produce evidence that there were dogs being eaten. You satisfy that, then they say that there's another issue of allegation that they've claimed that if they pass a bill like this, they could get sued for racism. This is what being shared with me. So hearing all of that, I call to ask Senator He's office, and I'm told, well, we were never going to introduce a bill. And we as much stated that because we have a number and we introduce a large number of bills, but we were not going to introduce that. And so what is communicated by Barbara Steinberg is that she was misled for this nearly two-month period, coming close to the actual introduction date, the deadline, the cutoff date for introducing bills. And what I was told, now brace yourself, this is supposed to be a democracy. The last time I checked, they told us we were still free, but, you know, I'm sure there's some constraints now that are different from yesterday. But the process I thought, where if you had a concern and you wanted to advocate for something and lobby your Congress and your senators and your political electees, you could do that. But here's what I was told by a gentleman named Ikaika, who I'm told he's a lawyer and works on the Judiciary Committee. He tells us that we should go and consult Inga Gibson of the Hawaii Humane Society of the United States or some other organization that she's affiliated with. Now, how and why would we be told, or that, especially me, I have a nonprofit 501c3 EnviroWatch. I'm working on this issue with dogs. Why would I be directed to contact a nonprofit organization to get them to write a bill or to support a bill? And if I were to win their favor, win their support, then it has a chance of flying. Shouldn't the facts and the evidence, if you were truly motivated as a senator to pass these bills? And then I reflect back on the issue. This is Clayton He is the gentleman who for years did sat on his thumbs on shark fin, but when the glamour came, he was there and not taking issue with that. But that was an issue and I want you to listen to me good. It's not an attack on him, but a reflection and a query as to what's, is it common sense or just common practice to dismiss citizens nowadays? And that is very aggressive, very flamboyant occasion to have dinners and celebrate the passing of the shark fin bill, banning shark fin. Now, as I recall right from my research, and I did a lot of it, an extensive on shark finning, and it's my understanding and observation and documentation that a great many of people from Asia and Chinese people were eating and consuming shark fin. So why would Mr. He not be concerned about a racial discrimination complaint from that segment of the population, but when it comes to the dog, his people and his support staff utter these words, we're concerned that if we file or pass a bill, we'll be sued for racism. Doesn't wash, rather specious if you ask me. But again, there's that something is, as I've told you, why would I, as a citizen here, taxpayer, free-thinking, free person, need to go and be deferred to a nonprofit organization? I must remind you, the same organization is the same organization that came to town and with others and involved in wearing fake badges on the Bonnie Payne Animal Haven, a 400 animal rescue, if you may recall. And we actually inquired of the senator and asked him to have a hearing or ask some questions as to how a nonprofit organization from out of state could behave in such a fashion. And we got very little, or nothing actually, other than someone said in that office it was a good article that we produced and a good show. But then they become partners, embedded together, and now that if you contact Clayton He's office, you're told to contact Inga Gibson if you want a bill passed. Now, I know some of you out there in the animal advocate community are going, oh, no, you're going to piss him off, and it's going to make him mad, and he'll never do anything for the animals. Well, yeah, that might be a concern. But this is a guy also that is the rodeo king, if you must understand. This is the same man that supports the slaughterhouse. So you look at the kids you're going to have in this relationship, and you start to name them. Don't burden me with that, those of you that are out there. If you are concerned that Clayton He and others are not going to put the bill in because you're bad-mouthing him. No, I'm telling you, in a democracy, no one, I don't care how full of themselves they are, no one, senators, congressmen, presidents, nothing, not even the Pope, has the right to define what it is we think as a democracy. If he doesn't like that process, go form his own commission, his own private organization and company, but don't send people, citizens, and tell them they have to go to and consult and kowtow to a nonprofit organization that has questionable practices here on this island. And you can go back and look at that Animal Haven, Bonnie Payne, Norman Payne story and see what transpired in that. But you have all of this, and why? Why? Because the few behind, there was one thing who said that Inga Gibson, if she prioritizes the bill, then you would get a hearing. I didn't know that we had a fifth or sixth arm of government in this town. Or maybe we do, and I'm just stupid and won't admit it. But what does that have to do with animal protection, animal safety and your safety? Has a lot to do with it, because there's problems with this game, and that's what it is. So going back to the comment that it's as long as they're being shot in the head, it's okay. It's not inhumane. Well, it's rare that they will shoot them in the head, to be honest with you, because, first of all, some of these places are closely situated to other houses. And so the discharge of a firearm would surely bring attention and surely bring the police and surely expose you to being discovered as a dog breeder. Because you'd have to explain to the policeman why shots were fired and a dog was barking or yelping and there's a dead dog there. Why are you shooting a dog? A simple question. The police is going to ask the question. Why did you do that? What is that? So there don't, it's not a common practice as the Humane Society, the Hawaii Humane Society, had attempted to dismiss. Here's what they do. They put a bag over the head of the animal and they club him. Again, because they don't want to kill it and they want the blood to flow. So, again, it is a misinformation on the part of those of you out there that think that it's a practice that that is, first of all, it's just a joke and it don't happen. Well, it happens. And secondly, I hope that in this process that you understand and offer your support and at least giving this effort, this concern, a hearing. And ask your senators, if nothing else, have an exploratory hearing or something. But to compete with the Humane Society of the United States and their big bucks and their donations. And when you look at that, you have to ask, how can we dismiss this repeatedly, year after year after year? So that's the big deal. And I'm telling you that if you want to see it, we're going to be putting together some of this video and some of the efforts. And I can't begin to tell you how thankful I am that the very people who've been maligned and from that culture is actually assisting me, because they too know that it's wrong. That it goes back to that, just because you are Filipino, then most people look at you and want to come out and ask you, do you eat dog? Well, hell no, you don't have that right to do that and make that assumption anyway. But on the other hand, if it continues, it's an insult to project on people something of that nature. Is it racist? Is it ethnic attack, or what? What is it? So I look at all of that and say that one day maybe we will at least get a hearing, but so that you'll know, not a single legislator, even Miss Chan Oakland, she introduced my bill and never pursued it. She introduced this one by request, and this bill met the same demise. And I'll say to you that the legislators are not humane. I don't know, and I don't want to be humorous, but when was the last time a shark helped a person across the street? I've seen many of CNI dogs do that. When does a shark run up the stairs and bark and nudge the sleeping parties and the family members in the house to alert them to a fire? I've never seen a shark do that. When has a dog or a shark I should say, been displaced for months or a year and find its way back home to its family. Never saw a shark do that. But what I have seen is many sharks have attacked people, and in fact, it's on the increase, it appears. So how can we justify just tossing this out here, Clayton Heath, that you would aggressively pursue the shark fin? And I appreciate it, because we need to protect the environment, and these are apex species if you look from that standpoint. And then turn around and place upon the advocates, why should we be banning the eating of dog? We don't know what's happening. Why should we put a hearing? We don't know the volume of, if it's really common practice. But you pass a shark fin bill, and mind you, I've yet to see a shark chase a ball or a stick to bring a smile to your children's face. Never seen that. But I've seen millions of dogs. They do it every day. They bring joy, love. They even take dogs, mind you, to hospitals and senior citizens' homes, where children are their last days on this planet to live, and they're inflicted with main diseases, serious diseases. And they say the therapeutic aspect and the benefit of a dog being there. And yet we were eager. And I was part of that now, that shark fin thing, and I spent many nights down there on the harbor, and because that was wrong too. But how do we drop the ball when it comes to, and then demand that we don't care about dogs? Ask any soldier, how many times has a shark run in amongst a nest of aggressive enemy and cause them to lose their senses, and you end up prevailing, and you walk away from the scene alive? I've known a lot of dogs that do that. Never seen one shark. So I don't know what it is that is creeping into the conscience of Clayton Heath. I suspect it's money. I suspect it is that nasty, stinking dollar, that if I can do that and I partner with this national group, I'll get notoriety. And then I'll look at those, the advocates that live here who voted me in, who have a direct concern without any political or financial interest. I'll just push their head back underwater and silence them, or refer them to my big money buddy here. So this is what's going on, and it's not about government telling you what you can eat. So maybe this might help, and maybe it may aggravate and anger many of you and says, what on earth is he talking about? But it's no joke. And I would say, if you, I'm not going to preach to you and tell you you should care. I mean, that's up to you. But just know and acknowledge that it is occurring, and it's not a joke, and it's not about the black dog, and it's not about the Filipino people eating dog, and it's not about the Koreans eating dog, and it's not about African Americans eating dogs or any of that. It's about the conscience of a community, the willingness to turn our backs on one and be aggressive and say, oh, if you breed dogs, you shouldn't have them in conditions that is not comfortable. And speaking of breeding of dogs, some of the breeders out there actually breed, and not every offspring is perfect, so some of those imperfect offsprings are the prodigy of those that are born, find their destination is the butcher. These are facts. So the reality is, it's out there, and we'll be posting a great bit of this on the internet at carol@carolcox.com, and we hope to get some of it out on TV and or wherever to just show you and keep an open mind. Again, it's not about what the government telling you what to eat, and that's the trick of the day. They tell you that. And I don't know. I just can't tell you enough of what goes on with this. So anyway, it's a tiring subject, not very pretty, and maybe we'll get enough money to impress upon the legislators that we too matter, and what we believe in, our emotions and our senses are impacted by this. And so the next time you see a person, a blind person, a person needing a dog, one of their special service dogs, just remember, they have some little buddies in various enclaves here that are going to be served for dinner. So anyway, watch out, and it is not just a dog-eat-dog world. It's a man-eat-dog world. So see you in the next hour, and we're going to be talking about border water supply and some other things. So hopefully you join in. Talk to you later. Thank you.
The Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
You to be quick and do it. Paper. Put it on paper. you won't sign your name.
It's time for the Carol Cox Show on K108, heard every Sunday from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. If you have questions for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080.
Okay, welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. I was just thinking, as I shut off the first hour there, what would Randy Jackson have said about that show? And I suspect he would have said, yo, dog. So, anyway, I couldn't get him in the studio, and I thought I'd try my best at imitating him. So, anyway, please feel free to give a call. Someone's there now. I'll open it up. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Hello, Mr. Cox.
Yes,
sir. I listened to the last hour, and I'd just like to add a couple things.
Okay.
There's a book called Fit for Life. It's kind of philosophical. It's like the planet's 70% water, 30% land. Your body's 70% water, 30% solid mass. So your diet ought to reflect that. Also, religions like the Jews have kosher, the Catholics have the Bible for food instructions, and the Muslims have the Quran. They have chicken halal style or whatever. It's a bloody mess down here, Mr. Cox. I don't know what to make of it.
So I got one question. Where you been so long? I haven't heard from you in a while. I thought maybe you had you said you were going to be booking out of here. I'm glad to hear you back.
I don't know, Mr. Cox. I've got a condition that just drives me crazy. The whole nature of this bloodlust in the world. Mm-hmm. How many good people are they killing in wars that they don't eat? You know what I mean?
Right.
It's the bloodlust. We were designed by these people that wrote the Fit for Life diet that said we're basically frugivores. We were designed to eat fruit. Then they come out with the vegetable-based diet.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. God came into the picture. Then Yahweh was a mean God. He's on whoever side chose him, and then they went for people. So that's basically all I can add is
mm-hmm.
just those thoughts. And hopefully that other cultures learn somehow that maybe the disease or whatever that dogs have or whatever the recommendations in all the good books say don't eat are for a good reason.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how you get away from cruelty, sir.
Yeah.
Having to wake up and work for nothing, and that's inhumane. This whole situation down here feels inhumane.
Mm-hmm.
You got to try to find love and aloha through all the smell and all the
Yep, the trash.
You know, your health
mm-hmm.
matters, huh?
Right.
All right, sir, so I know you want to talk about the water board. I'd like your show to go back on air, and thank you very much for coming.
Anything you want to talk about, help yourself. Thank you. Thanks for calling. Aloha. Anyway, I do apologize. If the show was in the afternoon, well, I try to schedule it before dinner or breakfast, and I'm going to say to you, I know it wasn't palatable to talk about, to wake up in the morning and to hear what this guy is going to be talking about, and it's dogs and the eating of dogs. And there's so much more to be said, and again, I want to invite you to carolcox.com. And you'll see pictures and the reference. So this isn't something that I woke up overnight and decided I'd do a show on. I've attached to a link to some of the other stories and some of the investigations. And we're going to dog this until someone pays attention. Even if I have to put on a suit and a tie and go borrow $80,000, I don't know from which of you would loan me that, and go down there and wave it in front of the legislators and say, it's yours if you just pass a bill. If, in fact, I'll go get some more money, if that's what it takes, if it's about money. But it shocks the sense of many of us. So, anyway. Good morning, caller. You have a comment or question?
Hello?
Yes.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Better to meet you then, brother. Good to hear you talking.
Well, thank you.
About the dogs, you know, It's, you know, the people that eat dogs, I just hope they have the worst karma. I hope they get bit by a vicious, you know, rabid dog. That's all I could say, man.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, is there a saying man's best friend is a dog, a canines?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? This agriculture, you know, the Hawaiians used to cook up a couple hundred dogs every feast and stuff, but, you know, I mean, you don't hear about Hawaiians going out and snatching dogs, per se.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So they got it out of their culture. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah. But these other cultures, you know, they'll eat anything. It crawls, it walks, you know, if they can capture it, you know, it's theirs. If they can raise it, it's really theirs. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
The kill. But it's just, it's really disgusting. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, there ain't no dog, you know, that you couldn't take off the street and befriend him, and the next thing you know, he's, you know, he's your best friend in the world.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like you said, sharks, you know, hey, go for the sharks, you know. I don't like them to just cut off the fin. You know, if you're going to harvest the shark, eat the whole thing, you know. You know, but just cutting off the fin, that's kind of stupid. Like, you know, he's part Chinese, huh? So he must be a punk and it must, you know, because the Chinese eat dogs. Chinese eat just about anything they can capture, too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know. Not all Chinese now.
No, I'm just talking about the culture in China.
Oh, okay.
You know, I read this book about endangered species in China. They got restaurants, hidden restaurants, that just cater to endangered species
mm-hmm.
to eat.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. Yeah, those people don't care about nothing. You know what I mean?
Well,
I'm not talking about he's going to eat a dog or anything, because I know him personally, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But still, if anybody had any, you know, I didn't, you know, when you bring it up that it's illegal to raise dogs and kill them and stuff, and that the Humane Society says shoot them in the head, then I didn't know that. You know what I mean? You know, if I saw somebody trying to eat a dog, I think I'd report them to the cops. But, you know, I would have been an a-hole because I would have been wrong, right?
Well, it's such a convoluted explanation that they give us. So I don't really know if it's illegal, not illegal, or what. It's just that they won't offer support.
You mean to actually say the Humane Society that
it was,
every day tries to give away dogs, we let you shoot one in the head and eat them?
It was, I reported that on my show earlier, some while back, and I spoke to Linda Haller at that time, and we actually have it on tape, so I want to...
Yeah, okay, you reaffirmed it.
Yeah.
Well, man, I tell you, I will never give another penny to the Humane Society, and I have given money,
yeah.
But I ain't going to give them no more money.
Let me give you a little experience here. The other day when I'm sitting there looking from a distance afar, and this person picks up this dog out of the cage, and I'm thinking, okay, this is a big dog, you know, of size. And you look at it, it's a puppy, a little plump puppy. And the saddest thing you'll ever see. And I'm sitting there going, what do you do? Who are you going to call? So I'm not going to call anybody because I'm going to appeal to the public. I'm thinking that the public out there, all of us, recognize the importance of just getting rid of this practice, and that if it's going to be allowed, then regulate it. I'm not advocating for that, but do something. We can't just be stuck on stupid and saying, oh, well, it don't exist, and if we do take an action, it's going to be racist. You know.
Yeah, well, let me tell you this. The next time I get a chance to go by the Humane Society, I'm going to walk in there real cool, calm, and copacetic and go, yeah, you guys believe in eating dogs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm going to get to a nice crowd going there about 11 o'clock when there's a lot of them people down there trying to adopt dogs and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of get a little bit louder, you know, than everybody else so they can hear what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then walk out of the building like, yeah, you guys put out the, you know, you can kill a dog and eat it if you want it.
Yeah.
And here you are trying to give it one way and charge me $60 for it.
Yeah, well, they went in to go further, Letha DeCaris, of HPD officer, end up looking me up and calling me in to interview me and interrogate me, right?
Yeah.
for doing what they all should have been doing, and then just drop the ball. And believe it or not, that party is now has increased his activity of selling dogs.
Yeah,
you
unbelievable,
see, so,
man. I tell you, these people got no soul. They got no conscience.
But they got money, brother. They got money. They got
money.
Money. Money, 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 money.
Money talks.
Nothing like the smell of money, man.
Yeah, it's ugly. It's just as ugly as you can get. Bottled water supply. I know you're going to talk about that in a little while. I'd like to just give my own opinion of the bottled water supply. To me, they're robbing a public resource, the water. You know what I mean? Just because they can stick a pipe in the ground and put a suction hose on it and start sucking out water. You know what I mean? And then sell it to me for $7,000 after I use a certain amount of water. You know, I don't pay that bill. I have my own water system where I live, so our rates are real, you know, accommodable to what, you know, what we are and stuff. But they're trying to come into my valley, you know, here pretty soon, and we're going to, you know, raise the gate on them guys, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But the bottled water supply is the biggest ripoff to everybody out there. Listen, we're getting screwed. The rain falls from the sky, perforates through the ground, goes into the aquifer, and they come along and pump it out and sell it to us for unbelievable prices.
Yeah.
And the water should be real cheap, you know what I mean?
And
I mean, how many...
And their mantra is misleading. There's nothing like pure water. Are they suggesting that this is pure water when you're pumping contaminants to houses in Einheim?
Right. And, you know, and their trip is they'll pump it till they start pumping salt water, and they'll sell you a little bit of that, too, if you drink it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because I'm up on the water pumpage on the windward side, and if you look at the record from the 94 until now, it's going down, down, down from like 25 million gallons a day to like 14 million. So they're running out of water on the windward side, my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't believe it, you just watch and see when they start sucking that bugger through, you get the brackish water. Because it's, you know, and my valley, Waiholi, is the last place where they can steal water from on the windward side.
Mm-hmm.
All the other places, all the other valleys, they've got capped in already. This is the last one that has water that they can harvest. And we're not going to let them harvest because they'll suck our water dry, too. So, you know, everybody out there, I would say, you know, for the dog guys, say to your legislators and whoever you may know to stop, make a law, at least have some kind of control over these puppy mills, you know what I mean, and the puppy mills that kill them for food.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? There should be some kind of regulation on both of them guys, you know.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I've watched and observed dogs after they've been hit by a car or a car rollover, and they're there and they're in pain, right? But there's no sound like a dog that's at a butcher's.
Yes, don't even mention that. I've had dogs around me since I was a little teeny kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? We raised boxers back east and stuff like that. And ever since I've been here, I've always had at least three or four dogs. I usually get a female, mate her, and then keep her pups, you know, three or four of them. So I have a nice little pack that understands from the mommy to protect your area. And you know what I mean? I don't get too many thefts, you know, and stuff like that, you know, because I'm a farmer. And I get thieves all the time coming stealing my crops, you know what I mean? But my dogs have saved me a lot of times. You know, I'd come home at night, and, you know, they're barking and barking. I go, man, there's somebody on my farm.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not barking because I'm home, because they don't usually do that. You know what I mean? And then I let them loose off of the chain, and they go right to where the people are hiding.
Mm-hmm.
And they're screaming, no, no, not the dog, not the dog. I let them bite them. I say, yeah, you're here for the wrong reason, pal. You got
but you know, the imagine in the way back in time when we became friends with dogs and incorporated them in our lives, what they did to save us, how they protected us from attacks by other beasts.
Animals,
whatever,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, they're the best thing. Anybody that's down and out. You go pet your dog, man, and you're going to come back up. You know what I mean? I don't care how low you are. You always got a friend and an animal. And I look, you know, how the animals, the dogs did come to man was, and how they became not meat eaters, is they would eat our grains, you know, that we threw away on the side. And then that's how man became friends with them.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because they ate our grain. That's how their stomach changed around from the meat eater until they could digest, you know, grains, flats, wheat, you know what I mean, your barley, the other, you know, the beginning grains, and then when mankind was, you know, went into farming and stuff. So I was just reading that at National Geographic or one of the magazines, traced it back, and that's how, you know, how would you get a wolf to come be your friend, and if he ate in your trash pile, and then, you know, and then you became his friend, and he gave him some, and then he came into your house.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been with dogs for since we've been civilized, you
mm-hmm.
know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's just a shame. You know what I mean? It's just sickening out there. Anybody, I love somebody to call in and say, yeah, dog meat is good, this and that, and you can go to hell, I'm going to keep killing dogs. Like, you know what I mean? Just to bring out the real inside, you know what I mean? You can see how gross and callous they are, you know, than people. Mm. Like you said, they put a bag over his head, they kill him and stuff like that. It's just, it's sad. You know what I mean? You say that and the tears almost come to my eyes.
Well, we save them, and what we'll do is hopefully... Clayton, he somehow would stoop so low to listen to the show or some of his people. And
well, Clayton knows me. He knows Robert. If he's out there listening, I just down to his office about a month ago to give him some paperwork, a thing that I'm working on. So I don't know. Everybody has their, you know, their standards, right? You know, what they see was right.
Right.
And, you know, it's killing a dog to eat. Yeah. Man, that don't make any sense mm-hmm. for a human. You know what I mean? I could see, even if I was on an island and he was the last thing that on the island, being the dog, I'd keep him. Because I'm going to die anyway. I might as well die with somebody that's with me. You know what I mean?
Right.
Even if I eat him, I'm still going to muck it. You know what I mean? So I'd rather have a companion to where, you know, lay down and, man, me and him are in the same boat. You know what I mean? We ain't going to get out of this boat, you know, together if we do.
Here's what bothers me, you know. For example, and I wasn't going to go into great detail. There's so much that I don't want to sit here and whine, but when we get on the airplane, we rely on dogs to make us safe. We fly, especially this community, this state, right? I mean, of all places, right? Not just, but my major transportation source of to other places is the airlines, and they have bomb-sniffing dogs and drug-sniffing dogs, right? And then we fly away and come back, and, oh, I sure miss my piece of dog. I mean, I'm being facetious, but you understand that that's what's really, really painful.
Instead of missing a papaya or a good, you know, meal of your oatmeal or whatever, I want to eat some more of that dog meat, you know what I mean? Especially around the bone where it feels soft and tender and whatever how they think about dogs, you know what I mean?
Right.
You know, I'm not a big meat eater. As a matter of fact, meat is probably the last thing I think about eating in a day, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And dog would be really the last thing in my lifetime that I would really want to eat.
But, you know, you take, for example, the dogs, this connection that we have with them. Now, you ever been hiking or hunting and you in the wilderness, and you and your dog become separated? And this has happened to me on occasion, where as a game warden, I have my dog and she's with me, and we become separated. And you know what you do? This is how it's so difficult for me to not to project on others and say you shouldn't eat whatever. But here's what happens. My dog gets separated, and I come down off the mountain, and I know she's going to be okay, right? And so here's what I do. I take my shirt off, and I leave my shirt near the trail.
Yeah, there you
go. And I come back the next day.
And there she is.
And she will be laying on that shirt.
Yeah, man, you bring tears in my eyes.
Now, how do you go and take a knife and put to the throat or club something? In that, not all dogs are that weak. Don't get me wrong. But
most of them are. If you have any kind of connection with them, boy, they're the most faithful, they're way faithful than women.
Yeah. Wait now. Well, I didn't say that, folks.
But I mean, no, they are. See, what chick is going to come out of the house? She's going to come down and holler at you for not flying in her.
Hey, I don't want that one to come back and bite me in the you know what. So
Okay, my man. We'll talk to you later. Keep up the good work. I'm supporting you 100%. Please try to get something gone.
All right.
If you ever have any rallies, I'll be there.
The next show will be titled 101 Ways to apologize to women. Sponsored by Robert.
I love my dog, too. You hear me?
Okay. Hey,
you're
thank you.
More faithful.
All right. Aloha.
Bye.
Aloha. All right. Well, anyway, I'm going to apologize, even if there's no need for it, but anyway, loyalty is loyalty, I guess. So, I want to share with you on this border water supply, and this comes to mind, and I decided to talk about this just briefly, and I'm going to share you some information that I got from people that have been watching the border water supply, and they're, you know, this new proposal to put in fluoride in the water. And you know, I've reported to you about 2 weeks ago, so the Einaheina incident, and then there are other ongoing now. I've gotten complaints from others calling up to say that they too are now still experiencing the taste of urethane or chemicals in the water there at Einaheina area. So anyway, I got this information, and there's a group working on fluoride, and they've expressed some concern. They sent me a little note, and this is what they're claiming, and I'll put it that way. And then if the border water supply is out there, please don't hesitate to call and offer some input, or if you want to, next week I'll try. But I just thought I would talk about this because there's nothing like pure water. So the Honolulu Border Water Supply, this is the allegations here and the information I've gotten. The Honolulu Border Water Supply has spent millions of dollars to have a mainland company to do the work that lab supervisors are supposed to be doing. Since the early 2000s, the Border Water Supply hired MWH Labs, now called Eurofin Labs, to start their quality assurance program for the chemistry lab. It was supposed to be a short-term contract, and the supervisors in the chemistry lab were supposed to take over after a few years. MWH was hired because the chief chemist at the Border Water Supply refused to do his job, and that was write standard operating procedures for the analysis and the quality assurance manual. So, which describes the chemistry lab's quality assurance procedures. Subsequently, the lab lost its certification. I didn't know that the Border Water Supply's lab lost its certification some while back because of the Department of Health found that the Border Water Supply was not taking any positive steps to adhere to EPA or DOH requirements. In the first year, MWH, a California company, visits the Border Water Supply chemistry lab about four times a year, and an AMD begins to write the QA manual and the lab SOPs. While advising the supervisors and chemists to properly run their analysis, with the help of MWH, the BWS, Border Water Supply, was able to regain their certification by DOH. MWH continued to advise visit the BWS till today, providing written updates to the SOP and the QA, continued training and other training consulting. The supervisors of the chemistry lab have become comfortable with having their work done by MWH and have not made any attempt to take over the work. MWH is doing it still. The Border Water Supply pays $100,000 a year to MWH for their QA services to the chemistry lab. So apparently, there's people in there that we've paid and hired, and for their expertise and the claim here, the allegations here is that they're not doing their job. About 3 years ago, the Border Water Supply hired MWH to improve the condition of the microbiological lab, which does bacterial screening of Oahu's water. The chief microbiologist was not competent enough to write their QA manual and SOPs. It was later found that the chief microbiologist did nearly nothing in the lab and did not understand any of the basics of microbiology. Wow. That's some powerful allegations. They're strong. He resisted many of the changes that MWH wanted because the Border Water Supply was using outdated methods and procedures. The BWS Microbiological Lab has never lost their certification, but MWH found many discrepancies that would have warranted decertification. The current microbiologist staff struggle to keep up with their work because of staffing losses and delays in hiring. The Board of Water Supply pays MWH $100,000 a year for this service, for their services. And finally, in late 2010, the Board of Water Supply Chemistry Lab took over the sampling of Oahu's water from the DOH. The DOH fired most of its samplers and required the Board of Water Supply to get the samples. The DOH attempted to help the BWS by providing sampling guidelines. The chief chemist refused to be responsible for scheduling the sampling, and the Board of Water Supply was forced to hire MWH to provide sampling schedules to the lab. The rumored cost of the Board of Water Supply is also around $100,000 a year. And that basically, they're saying they think that listeners out there is curious about this and find how supervisors at the top pay scale are not doing their job. Maybe that's something you as taxpayers would want to know about or hear about. And who knows? I was talking to a couple of the employees and following up on this, and they were telling me that what is happening, they've had the Mufi Hanneman's appointment, the guy that Hashino, I guess it was his name, said that they thought, in their, to quote them, that was during that tenure was the worst they've seen in Board of Water Supply. So it would be curious to hear what the manager of Board of Water Supply is trying to do to fix the problem. Currently, the manager does not seem concerned about the amounts of money it squanders in this area. So imagine that. This is the Board of Water Supply, and as Robert pointed out, we're getting something that's naturally ours, and we're having to pay at the pump or at the faucet or at the hose. And the money that goes into it, really, there should be an investigation, in my opinion, with the kinds of things and this relationship between the Department of Health, the State Department of Health, and the Board of Water Supply. I think when you consider all of the implications that exist, the bad things that exist when you have bacteria, you have contaminants, and you have military contaminants, and oils, and chemicals, and pesticides, and insecticides, chlordane, dildern, and aldrin, and all of that going into the water, and you have this kind of behavior being reported and the allegations rising. Could we really trust, should you open your mail and look at the actual little note that comes along with it that tell you what's in your water? I'm learning that you shouldn't trust anything with the Board of Water Supply, to be honest with you, on face value, really. I don't know how you can rectify that or prove, but I got a call just recently about Mililani. There is a concern with the chlordane, the contaminants in the water tank over there. And I'll check again to see what the exact chemical is that, maybe not chlordane, there may be another, and I'll think of it, heptachlor, I think. But they're bypassing the filters. They're up at, going up toward Mililani Mauka along the freeway there. Now, why would you bypass filters, putting a bypass pipe in to go direct? Why would you do that? So I'm going to be asking questions about that. And then you take, you go to Kunia. There's issues out there, and as I reported, that at least six or seven of these tanks that were purchased or that they contracted out, many of them are cracked. If you go up to Tantalus and you going up Round Top, there's a one sitting looking over Manoa Valley. If you drive in there, look at the green moss. There's a huge crack and the water just leaking out. So I'm told that the delivery of these things, they are broken. And when the contractor delivers them or finishes building them, some of them are flawed and leak. And all of that translates into hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars. And if they're allowing that, and I think I'm going to go back and post some pictures of later in the coming week as I do some more digging. And I've actually have pictures of Board of Water Supply workers sleeping in the park in their trucks. And when I say sleeping, I don't mean for lunch break. I'm talking about sleeping for hours. And two occasions, and one was there in Waipio, the Patsy Meek Park, I actually pulled alongside where I could reach out and touch the vehicle and sat there, window to window, and recorded this guy snoring. And he stayed there for about 3.5 hours, never moved, in a marked Board of Water Supply car. So so I look at all of this, and I look at our bill, and I think, wow, this is interesting. So you want to know something funny? The next time you see a Board of Water Supply truck, when I say truck, look at the passenger type of cars and SUVs. There's a culture there that why would the Board of Water Supply need car seats for children in their cars? So the next time you see one, see if you can see what I see on occasion. There are baby seats in the, and then you'll see them at the store, and you'll see them at various places, and you'll see them on the weekends, and it's like, gee, I didn't know the Board of Water Supply had a van pool. But all of this translates into higher costs to you and I at the faucet. And all of this translates into, if this is accurate, these claims that this person is making, actually there were several people that sent, joined in and sending this, that's troublesome. It raises my concerns and awareness that this is a culture of we are working, we're employed, and the managers, the mayors, they appoint these guys to manage that, the heads. And what happens? As long as, I guess, there's water coming out of the tap, they don't care what the cost is going to be and what's being squandered or what health risks are associated with this poor management. But just give you something to think about there. And that was pretty, pretty interesting. And we'll see what happens. And as Bob mentioned, you know, the desalination plants. Desalinization, I should say. The there's that one big facility over there at Barber's Point, Kalailoa, that's sitting back of Costco. And that thing will, there's some real issues, and there were, as I pointed out way back, there's some very serious issues with that whole process. And that up above is the pool, what's the name of the Pu'upalalai trash dump above the water park. And if you have a dump up top, why would you not be concerned that if you're going to drill wells down below that at a lower elevation, that those wells would not be impacted by the seepage or the drainage? And remember, in those days of the Pu'upalalai landfill, the liners were not required because they were pre-RCRA and what have you. So all of that contamination migrates, or plumes, or the leachate, and as the rain washed down, now, yes, there is a cover over that, but there are some major pukas, and there's also been repeated issues with gas and what have you. And so that's one of the concerns over there. So Board of Water Supply, we need to keep a closer look at them, a closer, bigger eye of watching them, because, and maybe if we took control over that, probably could see a decrease in our water bills. That's just a prayer there, I should say. Anyway, going back to changing tracks here, the Hawaiian homeland is again. I was thinking about the incident with Hana, the representative Hana. I don't condone racism. I don't condone attacks on people about their race and what have you. But it kind of got me thinking. Why don't we see in the papers constantly letters to the editor and what have you? When Rod Tam made his comment about Mexican Americans, and we see these things pop up once in a while. But here's what's funny. The media that reports these and the individuals, for example, that was there complaining about Hana, no one complains about and speak to specifics. And I'm not using Hana's situation as a justification for what I'm going to say. But look around you. Why don't we take the issue of racism and really deal with it and ask the question, why is it that you see little or no African American in the state workforce? Yet a great many of the young men and young women are educated and trained and skilled. Why are we seeing such a conspicuous absence of these people? These people, not those people. I mean, in a respectful fashion. If we want to talk about racism, why do we have the jail cells filled with guys with crack pipes, but the guy can steal you blind in government and he gets another job? Look at the makeup, the ethnicity of many of these organizations, of agencies, the revolving door. That, let's speak to that practice, that culture of working and discriminating against many of people of color and minorities and whites to get jobs. And then you retire and then you come back and you're hired again. Let's see if the paper will take on those issues. It's about time. You know, every once in a while someone says something off the cuff, which is foul and vulgar and an insult to humanity. But let's ask the real question. Look at your makeup of your political structure here. You look at, we have a culture of private schools, not against private schools, but how is it that we're struggling with the issues of public schools, and they're going to do something about it, and yet nothing. If you want to talk about priorities and racism and all of that and write articles and have it, someone apologize, let's go to Neil Abercrombie and ask him, why didn't you hire the best people? This is people's education that you're playing with. Why you have to hire Matteucci and Brian Schatz's brother and move them around and put them in positions such as that? Could you have not found a person of color that is capable of doing that? Not a person of color who has political connections, but one who has bona fide expertise in the education of people and children. That's where we're missing the boat. So, you know, you shout out, yo, homie, you know what? You can go on back down there, you know where the other brothers are. And then, boom, there's a big splash in the news, and everybody's upset and tight, and man, the world's going to come to end because utterance of racism. But all around us is racism in this town, in this state. But we won't speak to that. Let's go over there to the newspaper and ask them, why is it that you have one African American on your staff and yet, what do? Look at the top. How many women are managing in the top of the management of the newspapers? How many women are managing the TV stations? So it bothers me when I see, and again, if you yell out something that's obscene and offensive to people of color or race, whether you're white, black, green, or blue, the reaction to those don't match up to what really should be going on. Let's go to the fire department. Have you ever ever seen an African-American working with the city fire department here? Well, it's kind of hard. They're good people. They work hard. And, you know, it's hard to tell unless you went before the fire, because after they get there fighting, they've got soot on them. So it might appear that some. But I've been observing this, and I'd like to know, why aren't they not recruiting African-Americans? Why are there so few women in the fire department? And on and on and on. So when we grab hold of this big word about racism and what Hannah said about a painting, I think we miss the picture. We don't get the big picture. And the media does this to us. And, oh, you know, Rod Tam, he called the people, you know, he referred to them as wetbacks and da, 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 da. And then you turn around, the same people that are writing this story refuse to hire and elevate Filipino, Mexican-American, Koreans to the top of the batch in the newspaper industry. So I get a little worried when I hear people up top that can behave in a fashion that is insensitive, that going around and herding human beings from the sidewalks, human beings from the park, because you've screwed them already and they don't have it where you raise their taxes, you've screwed them royally. And then you turn around and go, oops, Hano says this. Or whoever, it could be anyone. So let's look at the real racism that is entrenched here, that's embedded here, and ask why the union, this practice that we all brothers in the union, that is a form of racism, because you're only limiting the local population. You'd scream bloody murder if you were told when you went to Oregon or Kent, Washington or Boston and what have you, that your kids couldn't come because they're not local, because they have to jump through the hoops. Like you make the people here from outside come here, you have such barriers in place. You see, so when we look at this, look at the makeup and the leadership in the schools, in the elementary schools, in the high schools, the principals. Who are they? So I've observed something that I think is more offensive than anything. A great many of the people, at one time I had a list, and it's just casually making, great many of the people that send their kids to private school work in public school. Now, if it's not good enough for your kids, why the heck would you want to be working around there and doming the rest of the people up? Why don't you go and become an administrator at the private school with your kids, those brilliant kids? Let's look at why not. Let's look at the communities where predominantly Hawaiians. Let's see how we're doing the Hawaiian homeland, people dying on the list, waiting to get a lease. That's something that's rightfully theirs, but you got people in place that are denying them. That's what we need to see talked about. Yes, Hanahana was wrong, but I think all of you are wrong if you think that it's something that we want to see every time one of these little flare-ups occur, and then you go back to hustling people off the street, not providing them medical care, and all of those things. Leaving little kids to monsters out there, little Joey and all of the other kids that come up missing, abused, because they are in these communities that you don't care about. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that racism. So anyway, that's what it's about. And if you don't like it, meet you at the dog pound. But anyway, that's the way it is. It's the way the world turns, I guess. And we need to do something about that. But I'm told, changing the subject again, but again, talk about racism and the structure of it and its tentacles. You heard about the selection of the DHHL. They were going to manipulate that. And you heard the story about Artie Pons. And then Artie Pons, they're saying, suggesting that it's out there at Campbell Industrial Park, Kalailoa. It's going to be hopefully given to the HCDA. Now, how could HCDA get involved with Hawaiian Homeland? How can they be? You understand? So why are these little games? They're not calling names. They're just treating as if you are inhuman or you don't matter. You're cultural sites. So we look at that, and I got an email and talking about, I'll just share it with you. Federal law, namely the Hawaiian Emissions Act, states expressly under Section 4.3 that all proceeds and income from the available lands as defined by said act shall be used only in carrying out the provisions of said act. The nominee to the post of DHHL director knowingly and with intent conspired with the governor's chief of staff and the attorney general to direct funds from the Hawaiian Homelands Trust Fund, a position at the homeless agency that would not be solely dedicated to the purposes of the Hawaiian Homes Commission Act. This is a violation of federal law and requires investigation by the U.S. Attorney's Office. Further, the governor's office stated in the paper that this has been done in the past and we must correct this. In the past, they're saying we must correct. Instead of confirmation hearing, Senator Galatera, the former chairman of the Democratic Party, should be requesting an investigative hearing. We'll wait until do that. I doubt that'll never happen the way these boys play. The rule of law matters. Lawmakers are law breakers. So, which is worse, taking an entire community or a nation of people and stepping on their head and disrespecting and subjecting them to hardship and robbing them and diverting their monies because they are what? Not human? Because what? They don't have blonde hair? Because of what? They don't speak the English language like you without pidgin? Or is it because they're just people of color and that's the way the world has evolved and they're on the bottom and we can change that. We can break all that cycle if we stop focusing on the hanahano moments and get down and roll up our sleeves and deal with every aspect of racism. If you tell me, like many of you say, I haven't experienced racism, then your doctor is giving you some strong medicine. Your medicine is just too strong because you're not dealing with reality. So it's out there, it's prevalent, and Hanahana was wrong, but I think the bigger picture is that we're all wrong if we allow this to continue. So I'm going to close and see you next week, and we'll see what we're going to do for you here.
Thank you for tuning in to the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sunday mornings from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. right here on K108. Tune in again next time for the Carol Cox Show, right here at KWAI Honolulu.